The Shilling Show continues here, and we'll pick up those open phones once again at the top of hour number two. We welcome David Murata, president of Murata Wealth Management, talking today about parts of government that should be shut down, as there has been discussion once again of, a looming government shutdown. Well, maybe this could work out for everybody. He is the president of Murata Wealth Management and online at MurataOnMoney.com. David, welcome back to The Shilling Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, let's talk about the preemptive promise of Mitch McConnell. Boy, you know, people hear this and all the air goes out of their sails.
Yeah, Mitch McConnell, the incoming Senate Majority Leader, promised that, quote, there will be no government shutdown or default on the national debt. You know, in the primaries, he set his goal to crush Tea Party challengers and their ideas, and his goal is to be a right-of-center governing majority. I mean, by definition, a moderate. And for him to think that this is why the Republicans got any vote at all is a little bit ridiculous. You know, voters who swung to the Republicans in the elections don't really care if politicians have a D or an R after their name. But Mitch McConnell's number one goal is to keep the team with the R in control of the Senate, as though that's the goal of government, is to have your party win. And, you know, the average voter is just completely frustrated with partisan politics over what's good for the national interest. And Republicans can be as guilty of business as usual. Let's promote legislation that gives people things, because, man, then maybe they'll think of us as the Santa Claus party rather than the Democrats. And the Republicans are never going to win that battle. The Democrats are always going to give more away than the Republicans will, or just promise more. And if the two parties are promising more and more and more to try to keep their power, that's just not going to work.
David, I had an opportunity to address a local Republicans on Saturday morning post-election to talk about this. And it's precisely one of the things that I told people was, you know, you need to find out why you're doing this. What is your passion for this? What is it that you hope to accomplish? If you're just on this thing because you want your team to win, this is not a sport and that's not what it's about. But I think too many people have gotten caught in all of this. Hey, I just want my team to win. And then they scratch their heads and say, now what?
Yeah, exactly. You know, the idea of funding the congressional budget one item at a time, the idea of first having a vote on what the debt ceiling should be and how much we can spend, and setting a limit on the pie, and then figuring out the best use of the pie. It's the standard practice for every person who runs a solvent budget, mm-hmm. be they a business owner or be they a family. They are trying to have limited resources, and they're trying to make the most that they can out of their limited resources. And most families and businesses put a little bit away. They run a little bit of a surplus every year, because that's what you're able to do when you handle rainy days and emergency funds. The Democrats, and especially federal government as a whole, seems to do the exact opposite. They spend our children and grandchildren's funds on really very frivolous ideas. I loved your idea of a box of red pens in the hands of regular voters. We'd probably have this budget solved. Unfortunately, voters don't have a box of red pens. All they have is their vote. And in the last election, they did vote for less government, not more government. I think that was the primary issue. They don't like Obamacare. They don't like the regulations. They don't like what government is doing. They've lost trust in government. Government has too much surveillance. Government has their finger in too many things. There's too many regulations. And so I think they want less government. And so the way to do that is clearly to have a budget one item at a time and fund the things that we have common ground on first. And the things we don't have common ground on, maybe we shouldn't be funding at all.
David Murata, this is an exercise that the Democrats never want to do. And I'm sure there are some Republicans who don't want to do it either. But I've had personal experience inside City Hall where we were looking at a limited pot of money. And there was some consternation over, well, how are we going to fund all these things we want? And so I made the proposal, well, let's prioritize. Let's say, hey, this is important. This is important. All these things here we must fund. And then we look at how much money is left, and then we divide it up amongst the things that are not critical. And I couldn't get any takers.
No, it's unfortunately the exact opposite of government, because most people are in government because they want to be in the position of power making the decisions. And when you're in that position of power, there's this heart pull to solve every single problem, and so you have mission creep, greater and greater amounts. It's like the neighborhoods aren't coming together. Let's fund pizza parties for all the neighborhoods, and that's just ridiculous. It seems to me we should reward our elected officials for spending less money, not more. We ought to have some incentive where we pay them based upon how much they can cut government back from last year plus inflation. And then you'd start to see the incentives in the right place, because the incentives to spend more are huge.
I love this idea of incentivizing elected officials to reduce the budget quickly, and that they would see some sort of quote-unquote performance pay for doing so. You know, that would be a fascinating experiment if you could actually put that into practice, even in a small community, over the course of 5 or 6 years, and see what happened to the budget.
Yeah, one way to do it would be to limit it as a percentage of GDP, for example, mm-hmm. for the Congress. There's no reason for the Congress to ever be spending more than 20% of gross domestic product. We have never collected more revenue than 20% in the past 60 years. We're never likely to. The burden of government is too great when it gets beyond that in terms of taxation. And so they spend it by deficit spending. But you could do the same thing on a local level and simply say, we think government's too big. We'll only pay our county commissioners a percentage of what they can cut from last year's budget to this year. And then they'll have an incentive to start reducing government.
But you see, in the light of the recent election, there are local politicians, and I'm sure you can go right on up the ladder to the national level, who are completely tone deaf. So, for example, we see that there is a supervisor, Ann Malik, in Albemarle County, who wants to put on a container tax on beverage purchases, as you and I maybe grew up with in California. We used to go scavenge for the bottles. A huge bureaucracy, very expensive, very ineffective overall in accomplishing anything. And then we got another one by the name of Liz Palmer, who wants to give all the supervisors a raise to $50,000 or $60,000 a year. I mean, these people truly are tone deaf.
Our county supervisors are not at focusing on the things that they should be focusing on. That's clear, and it's clear that we need some coalition that's willing to get together and say, what does the county really want for its supervisors? What do we really want for our government? The problem is there's very little incentive for special interests to fund someone to cut government, because cutting government helps all of us equally, whereas the special interests that people put in place only helps the special interest. And so the special interest has a great incentive to go rent-seeking from government and get them to pass things.
977-1070 is the phone number here on The Shilling Show. We welcome your comments, questions, criticisms, any of the above. 977-1070. David Murata is our guest. The Shilling Show continues on the other side. Parts of government that should be shut down. Well, there are plenty of them all the way around. Let's hear your ideas. What ought we shut down? 977-1070. Shilling Show back with David Murata in just a moment. Hey, just think what wonderful qualified people we'd get on the Board of Supervisors if we paid $500,000 a year for salaries. It's kind of like, David, all the people who want to increase the minimum wage or the living wage, let's bring it up to $12 an hour. Let's make it $500 an hour. I think the same thing applies. If you're looking to get qualified people and lots of people in the applicant pool, $500,000 a year for Board of Supervisors might be a great idea.
You know, I might be willing to do $500,000 minus however much they increase it over last year's percentage of however much they increase it over last year's budget. You know, it might be worth $500,000 to keep them from raising it from $2 million.
Yeah, it may well be. And that's probably the only thing that would hold them back. We're talking about parts of government that should be shut down, closed up, hanging the gone fishing sign in the window. So let's talk about all of this, because there are a number of opportunities to downsize. You have listed them in one of your excellent articles online at MurataOnMoney.com. Let's just start out with the Department of Agriculture. You know, all of these things we've been hearing about for years because they've been with us for most of our lives or all of our lives. And we just say, well, they're obviously performing a necessary function and we couldn't do without them because they're there.
Yeah, the Department of Agriculture is mostly a wealth transfer program. It takes money from American families indirectly because of its processes and procedures, and it delivers it to special interest groups, a lot of different special interest groups. And I think I read, it's in the article coming up on Sunday, and I'm trying to remember now the exact amount, but I think it's either $1,200 or $1,400 per family is what the Department of Agriculture costs. In order to run it, and if you just take their budget and divide by the number of families in America, and just to take a very trivial aspect of the Department of Agriculture, and this is not part of their over $1,000 per per family that they're costing the American people. But this is one of the indirect rules. I didn't realize this until recently. There is a price for the commodity sugar. Now, you have to understand, there's nothing different about sugar in one part of the country or another part of the country. Refined sugar is refined sugar is refined sugar. But there is a futures contract in world sugar, and then there's a futures contract in U.S. sugar, and they're different because of the U.S. Department of Agriculture. U.S. sugar is a protected sugar cartel in the United States, and it costs a lot more. I think it's 157% more U.S. sugar futures than world sugar futures simply because of the cartel. And this cost, I think it's $3.2 billion. I forget. When they get so many zeros, I forget how much money it costs. But American households every year in the United States, as sugar prices are higher here than they should be elsewhere. And that's just one small example of regulations that are protecting U.S. sugar interests as though they need to be protected.
And it's distressing because I think if you dug down into any of these budgets, you would find things that were so outrageous. There have been exposés of the IRS and all of their cavorting and gallivanting and parties and all of these things. And I'll bet you those things are deep in all of these budgets. And yet we don't know about them unless somebody does the research to expose it.
Yeah. And certainly a lot of organizations expose it. The problem is no one has a vested interest in seeing it shut down except if you gave pens to the American vote, red pens to the American voter, and then they would cross it out. I think the Republicans have an opportunity to end corporate welfare, and corporate welfare is a huge part of the U.S. budget. They're the only ones that can remove it because when the Democrats try to remove it, the Republicans try to gouge them for other spending and then impede the process. This is an opportunity for the Republicans to show that they can cut some of their special interest groups. Simply because the American people want to see cuts. And it would be a great example of the Republicans doing what's right, even if it costs them some of the support from some of their special interests.
Well, let's talk about it and kind of personify corporate welfare. I call it crony socialism. But what exactly do we mean? And I want to say this because there's been an attack on certain companies who have fled the United States, like Apple. Oh, they're holding all their money overseas, which I really don't have a problem with. I don't necessarily consider that to be corporate welfare. They're just following the system to do what's best for their shareholders. But what exactly do you mean?
So, for example, with the Department of Agriculture, 70% of the farm subsidies that the Department of Agriculture support come from basically, I think it's four or five different food plants. So it's corn, soy, wheat, cotton, and I'm missing one more. And these are the very kinds of foods that produce now most of the American diet. Herbalists and nutritionists call this the plant deficiency syndrome because our diet has come down to basically about three or four different plants, and most of our diet is comprised of that. So, for example, if you just take a hair follicle and you measure the carbon in it, about 70% of it comes from corn, and they can measure something like that. Mm-hmm. Whereas in other parts of the world, it's less than 5% because they have a much more varied and nutritious diet. So why are we supporting the few different kinds of foods that are causing obesity and diabetes and just general unwellness among Americans? Why are we supporting them? Well, the reason why we're supporting them is because agriculture wants those subsidies to produce the things in the United States, and so they're not going to produce the lots of different grains and plants which are more nutritious. They're going to produce the things which they get paid for and they get subsidies for. There's no reason for that. The average farm household makes, I think it's $85,000 a year. And it's a lot more than the average American. So why are we subsidized? Why are we taking it away from the average household and giving it to farm households because they earn more money than the average household in order to produce food, which is less healthy for us as a society?
So let me ask you, what would happen if the Republicans said, okay, we're cutting all of this off? Let's just focus on agriculture for a second. All the subsidies are cut off effective November 1st, 2015. What happens in the lead up to that, and what happens in the aftermath?
Yeah, so in the lead up, Some people who were simply producing those food substances in order to rent seek and get the extra thing will figure out, you know what, I can actually now produce something else at the same cost as I could produce corn because it doesn't cost as much. It doesn't cost as much now compared to corn. And so they'll start producing a slightly more varied diet. Also, you'll find that the American people then will not have to pay as much in taxes because they don't have to have these kinds of departments being funded. And so our national debt will go down. And I would say taxes can be cut, but until our spending mm-hmm. gets under our tax revenue, I'm not sure you'll see that in your taxes. But you will see it in less debt and deficit in the United States. So will the price of corn go up? Yes, the price of corn might go up slightly, but the price of all the other foods that are now produced in more quantity will go down, and so it will simply have changed the supply and demand curves for different food substances. And I think you already know there's a greater demand for the other food substances because people are willing to pay more for them, even though they're not subsidized, simply to buy what they're buying now. And so they would be willing to pay more, and those prices would come down because now more people would be producing them.
It would be wonderful to just simply trust the market, to just trust the market, to get rid of all of these things that encumber the market and distort it and go, you know what? We're just going to trust it and we're going to live with it and we'll let the market make the corrections. Hey, if corn doubled in price, then people are going to start eating rice and wheat and other sorts of things, and eventually the corn will come down. Isn't that what markets do?
Yeah, that's what markets do. Markets have a greater genius for figuring out what is actually needed in society based upon the cost, benefit, revenue, production and demand than any government program ever would.
977-1070 is the phone number. Our guest is David Marotta. We're talking about parts of government that should be shut down or at least severely curtailed. When we come back on the other side, I want to talk about energy and education in our final segment here, and also if there's any realistic chance of any of these things happening. 977-1070, it's the Shilling Show on 1070 WINA. A final segment of the Shilling Show with David Marotta. Coming up in hour number two, we'll be having a Veterans Day discussion with Vic Pena and Alan Swinger. Also, the Convention of States Project. That's all coming up. Right now, we continue with parts of government that should be shut down. Let's go to the phones and we say hello to Paul. Hi, Paul. Welcome to the Shilling Show.
Hello, Rob. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Go right ahead.
Good. I wanted to say that I love listening to Mr. Marotta when he's on your show. I've caught him quite a few times, and we're in almost perfect agreement on what he's talking about today. And I think the problem is, as you know, my recent campaign was centered pretty much around what we're talking about today, and that's
yes.
the wasteful government spending that doesn't benefit anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so hard to get the point across to people, and I think the problem is because they trust government so much. You know, they just figure, well, look, everything's okay, so the government must know what they're doing, mm-hmm. and you know, I just don't understand how anyone could refute what Mr. Marotta has just been talking about or why anyone would not want the government to stop this wasteful spending.
Paul, I think it's a facade that everything's okay. I'm waiting for someone to rip off the facade and expose what's really going on, as you tried to do through your campaign. Let's get a response from David.
Yeah,
hold on just a second. Here we go. Go ahead, David.
I think Milton Friedman had an article which I thought was an interesting article. It was called The Fragility of Freedom at 60%, where he said when 60% of the people think their livelihood or the livelihood of their loved ones is dependent upon government, then government wins and you can't stop voting it out of office. And I think everyone right. knows that someone is going to get less rent seeking because of government. What they don't realize is that everyone is going to benefit when we cut government back. And that's why I think statistics like it's over $1,000 per family just to fund the Department of Agriculture, and then ask the question, are you willing to pay $1,000 out of your family household to fund the Department of Agriculture? Everyone looks at it and goes, no, I would not be willing to do that. And you have to ask that question. So, for example, I talked about the sugar subsidies. Well, if the sugar subsidies are even, you know, $20 per family household, are you willing to put a $20 bill down to know that the sugar cartel is going to make more money just because we're protecting global sugar from coming into the United States. And I think you have to say, no, why would I ever put $20 down simply to protect a sugar cartel? And so I think you have to frame it in those points of view. And I think if we can get enough people thinking like that, that's when, I mean, anyone who thinks about it for more than a couple of hours is a conservative and knows that government is incredibly wasteful and ends up leaning libertarian in terms of the finances. But most people don't think about it for a couple of hours. They just blindly go ahead and say, well, government knows what they're doing, and I want to be seen as having a heart. And so right. I would be unable for me to admit, you know, that I'm not a Democrat because of the social circles I run in.
Right, I agree. I thought it would be much easier to get that message out, but it turned out to be very difficult to get the message out. It makes such perfect sense to me. Actually, a figure that I had come up with by eliminating over 100 government departments and agencies was it would save the average taxpayer over $6,000 a year. You know, that's agriculture, education, commerce, on and on and on.
Yeah,
But it didn't seem to sell. You know, the idea didn't take with people.
Well, and the Democrats somehow say that, you know, all of this free markets that we're running is not making any traction with the American people because they should have $6,000 more a year now, and they don't. And I think we need to say that's government. Government is what is sucking an extra $6,000 out of every household every year that they should be earning more of.
Right.
Yeah, and it's hard. It's changing behavior and changing minds and changing
yes.
paradigms. And I think enough people make the click over to free markets. I don't think I've found anyone who at one point was a fiscal conservative or a libertarian who's gone to be a socialist. I don't think I've seen that. Because
no, I don't think
because
so.
You don't there's but, no such thing as becoming uneducated.
Right, exactly. But anyway, I do appreciate you talking about these things on the radio, and I enjoy listening to you, and I hope you can get the message out.
Well,
thank you so much.
We appreciate your efforts as well.
Yeah, and there's a guy who put it on the line. That was Paul Jones, who just ran for Congress, and he certainly was out there over the course of a number of months trying to spread the word. So, David, we've got just a little over a minute left to wrap all of this up. So let's put a little bow on the package here and reiterate to people why this is important.
Yeah, Harry Reid, the former majority leader, was asked if the Democrats were willing to work with the Republicans to compromise on one budget line item at a time. And he replied, "What right did they have to pick and choose what part of government is going to be funded?" and I think that's why he's no longer in the majority. He was the follow-up question, you know, was, well, you know, what if you can fund the things that are really important? And he said, you know, basically, you know, pick and choose. And he said, why would we want to do that? To have someone of your intelligence to suggest such a thing maybe means you're an irresponsible and reckless person. And
wow.
I think that was just a reporter who said, I was just asking a question. And that was the vehemence he got to the idea, which I think means it's a great idea. And we should go forward with it. The Republicans should try doing that. Americans look at Greece and they wonder how they got so far into debt.
Mm-hmm.
But many of those same people blame conservatives for failing to get the job done, as though the job is voting for harmful legislation that no longer has a 51% majority. We should not fund anything that 51% of the people don't think we should fund. And I would probably put the bar higher. I would say if there's not 60%, we probably shouldn't be funding it. Because it means that there's winners and losers, and it's not the government's place to pick winners and losers.
I like that, looters as well.
Yeah, looters. You know, and a prime example is Obamacare. Obamacare would not be passed today. It's so unpopular that it would fail to be funded even if we had infinite resources. You know, in 2010 and 2012, a number of Republicans were elected specifically because of their opposition to Obamacare. They defeated moderate Democrats who'd previously given it a slim majority. And opponents of Obamacare believe that defeating this move, you know, towards socialized health care is vital to the country and the economy. And so they should have the right to say, we're not going to fund it. We're not going to put it forward. We want it repealed. and we want government cut back.
David, it's been a terrific hour, full of wisdom and insights, and I just hope that we can move forward in the direction of the Constitution instead of a bigger government.
I hope so, too. We've tried the scalpel for the last 6 years. It's time to try the hatchet.
Yes, indeed. All right, he's online at MuradaOnMoney.com. We come back on the other side with open phones. 977-1070 is a phone number you can get in line right now. Shilling Show returns in a moment.